This podcast is part of the Acast Creator Network.
Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to The Stand with Eamon Dunphy. Now, the Israel-Hamas war or conflict continues, but it also continues to reverberate in the United States. The United States, of course, are Israel's biggest supporter, provider of weapons and money, and the guarantor of the security of the State of Israel. But that has been an expensive exercise in recent times for President Joe Biden in particular. And the latest news today, and it's quite significant, is that the United States has drafted a resolution for the UN Security Council demanding an immediate ceasefire and some resolution of the hostage situation. And we're joined now by Niall Stanich, Associate Editor of The Hill, a very respected Washington newspaper. And Niall is also the White House columnist for The Hill. Niall, this has made a lot of difficulty for Joe Biden. Of course, all difficulty is relative to the horror we witness daily in Gaza, and indeed to what happened on October the 7th, which was a brutal terrorist atrocity, the worst death toll since the Holocaust for Jewish people. This latest resolution drafted for the UN moves the story on a bit, and it obviously, well, you tell us, Biden is feeling the heat.
There's no question that he is indeed feeling the heat from his left, from progressives, from younger voters, and increasingly from the mainstream of the Democratic Party. And I think these new developments have to be seen in that light. There has been, in my view, quite understandable outrage from some Democrats about the stalwart support that Biden has given so far to Benjamin Netanyahu, while around about 32,000 Palestinians have been killed, and obviously just horrific circumstances have been imposed upon them or brought down upon them by the Israeli military assault on Gaza. Now, I think that it is significant that the United States is calling for a ceasefire, not least because on three previous occasions, UN resolutions calling for an immediate ceasefire have perished on the rocks of American opposition.
Yes.
So while I imagine some people will raise questions about the linkage here, the very explicit linkage to the hostages issue, it is nonetheless a significant shift from the Biden administration, and I think probably as a consequence of some of the pressure you mentioned.
Now, another element of this United States involvement came last week when Chuck Schumer, who's the majority leader in the Senate and the highest ranking Jewish official in American politics, called for Netanyahu to resign. He said he should call it an election, and he accused him of doing harm to Israel by his behavior and indeed by this invasion and the awful consequences we see for innocent Palestinian people.
Yes, and that was a very significant intervention, not least because Senator Schumer is a very, very strong supporter of Israel under all circumstances. And it's notable that Schumer himself is aiming his criticism at Netanyahu rather than the state of Israel per se.
Yes.
His argument, as you point out, is that Netanyahu has harmed or isolated Israel or put Israel in a place to be vilified by international opinion because of the brutality of the counterattack against Gaza following the Hamas October 7th attack. It is notable, I think, that Mr. Netanyahu on Wednesday of this week was addressing Republican senators, virtually, of course, he wasn't in Washington to do that, and he was complaining quite vociferously about the Schumer speech, and interestingly, Netanyahu reportedly sought to make a similar address to Senate Democrats and was rebuffed by Schumer himself in that regard.
Yes, and this Mike Johnson, the Speaker of the Congress, third in line for the White House should anything happen to Joe Biden and the Vice President, he is a fairly unimpressive figure, but he has invited Netanyahu to address the Congress, or is about to do so. That also would be another divisive move, divisive in terms of American opinion, and really making Israel an election issue and a divisive issue in Washington.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, as I understand, the Speaker is mulling whether to issue such an invitation, but it certainly would be divisive if it happened. And Netanyahu, even before the events of the past approximately 5 months, has been a divisive figure already. I mean, for example, way back during the Obama presidency, Netanyahu accepted an invitation to address Congress without informing the White House first, as the protocols would normally suggest. But more to the point, Netanyahu at that time sort of aligned himself with Republicans and against Obama over negotiations that led to the nuclear deal with Iran. To your other, the other facet of your point, Eamon, Israel is becoming, I think, a more partisan issue here. Republican voters and Republican elected officials are much more unambiguously pro-Israel, whereas it is an issue that divides the Democratic Party in a very serious way, as we are seeing. And so it's, in a sense, no surprise that Netanyahu would be willing to address both parties, but would only be welcomed to do so by Republicans.
Now, there's a remarkable situation here. The return to Israel of Antony Blinken, the U.S. Secretary of State. It's his sixth visit since this began in October. And really, he has got no joy in any of those visits. And it's clear now that Netanyahu is showing disrespect, if not contempt, for the United States. And the United States really are his, you know, his states, his countries, supporters, patrons, fundraisers, and indeed weapons providers, including some people think nuclear. But Netanyahu is taking Israel on a very, very adventurous path.
Yeah, he certainly is. And he really has, I think, pretty much, I think he has caused real embarrassment to Biden and the Biden administration by his refusal, explicit refusal to rein himself or his forces in. I mean, the most striking and potentially catastrophic example over the past few weeks has been the Biden administration's demand that an assault on Rafah should only proceed if the Israelis produce a credible claim, credible plan, for the evacuation of civilians. Netanyahu has essentially said, well, we don't really care what America thinks about that. We're inclined to do it anyway, and the decision to do it anyway will be made regardless of what President Biden says. That is, it's certainly a position one can take. It has notably produced a hardening of tone on Biden's part and produced, one might say, this request for ceasefire. It has not pushed Biden into the position that the left wants him to adopt, which is making future aid to Israel as strictly conditional or conditional in a meaningful way on them abide, Israel abiding by the laws of war. There has been a push to condition future aid on that basis. It has been made by people like Bernie Sanders and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, but the White House notably has not acceded to those requests as yet.
There's no doubt now, is there, Niall, that the Israel-Hamas conflict and the situation in Gaza will be, to some extent, an election issue because the Republicans are providing what looks like unqualified support for Netanyahu, whereas the Democrats are making a distinction now between Netanyahu and his hard right cabinet and, you know, another cabinet with a new leader, as Chuck Schumer demanded. And Schumer is very close to Biden.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And of the same generation as Biden, which tends to matter often in politics and in how Biden sees people in that way. It will be an election issue, partly because of the divides in the Democratic Party, partly because of the Republican posture that you just outlined, but also because obviously this forthcoming American election in November is going to turn to quite a large extent on turnout and enthusiasm among each party's base. The number of people who are truly undecided between Joe Biden and Donald Trump is assumed to be fairly small for obvious reasons. And that then places a premium upon getting your base voters out. We have already seen in the Democratic primary that Biden is struggling with a protest vote on Gaza. And that is despite him having only token opposition in the Democratic primaries. The state of Michigan, for example, more than 100,000 people showed up simply to register a vote for uncommitted in the Democratic primary. That, I think, points to the real worries that Democrats have about November and the related worry that Biden may have made quite a catastrophic political mistake in the first, let's say, 4 months of the recent conflict by such a close embrace of Netanyahu.
And of course, just before we move on, a Trump presidency, given his intervention in his former presidency, his intervention in Israel, his transferring of the American embassy to Jerusalem, which is a shared city between Muslims and Jews, and to a particularly sensitive, holy place in that city, God knows what Trump would do in terms of the future or possibility of any resolution, and that the whole other war on the West Bank, looming problem of immense consequence. God knows what would happen there. But we move on, Niall, to Trump's problems. And the biggest problem he has this week is that he has to find $464 million. It's a civil fraud penalty. It's from a case that was taken in New York, and he has to find it by Monday, or the state of New York, and indeed the New York Attorney General, Letitia James, can start seizing Trump's assets, including Trump Tower and all the rest of it. And he's struggling to find that money. And some reports yesterday had him panicking.
Yes, it is quite a dire situation. And this is one of the lesser known cases against Trump. Just to refresh your listeners' memory, since there are so many of these to keep untangled in one's mind. As you rightly point out, this is not a criminal case. This is the civil case pertaining to Trump fraudulently getting loans at an earlier point in his career by inflating his assets and lying to the banks about the collateral that he had. And ultimately, there was that $464 million penalty that was levied against him. The difficulty he has is that obviously he wants to appeal that verdict, but in the court system, you need to lodge the amount of the judgment against you in order to have an appeal go forward, just so people can't use that whole process vexatiously. And that leaves the Donald looking for the money. And he doesn't appear to have the money, at least in liquid form. He has suggested that he might be forced into selling some of his prestigious assets at what he terms fire sale prices in order to satisfy this request for a bond. It is notable that he has apparently approached several institutions for such a bond, and they've refused to give it to him, it would appear. So, you know, while this is not a case that has any potential jail time attached, because it's not a criminal case, it is nevertheless one that takes a square aim at Trump's prestige and his own record as a businessman. He, of course, claims that record to be pristine and amazing and incredible. It's actually quite a lot more checkered than that. But this case obviously poses a threat to his own conception of himself.
And he only has until Monday. He's asking his supporters, I mean, in all the, I don't know, five, six legal cases, well, say five legal cases, he's using, it appears, money that he's raised from supporters for his presidential campaign to pay lawyers and to keep those cases from happening. And delay is the name of the game here. And he seems to be getting some help from the Supreme Court. And one way or another, it's very difficult to see any of these cases reaching a courtroom and a jury or a judge before November.
Well, the advantage for Trump is that the of the four criminal cases, the one that is by far most likely to reach a courtroom, or that he has least chance of delaying past the election date, is a separate case also in New York about hush money payments to an adult actress, Stormy Daniels, and to a former Playboy model, Karen McDougal. That is, in most people's estimation, including mine, the least serious of the criminal cases against him as far as the alleged conduct goes. And it's not, in again, in my view, an absolutely watertight criminal case. So even if that one were to go to trial, and let's say, for the sake of argument, Trump were to be acquitted, that would obviously be used by him to colour the public perception of the other outstanding criminal cases and to bolster his argument that it is a politicised attempt to do him in. And that would be something that his supporters would lap up for the most part.
He said it's a fix and all of that stuff. And there are sufficient numbers of people prepared to believe that. Interestingly, Joe Biden's re-election campaign has a significant fundraising advantage over Donald Trump that is kind of at odds with what the polls are showing in terms of the likely outcome of the election at the moment. That favors Trump particularly, and we'll come to this in a few moments, in the close states, the seven states that are battleground states, where Biden won six last time. Of that seven, at the moment, he's behind in all seven, but he's ahead with dollars in the bank.
He is, and ahead by quite a striking amount. The new figures have only recently come out, Eamon, covering the time up to the end of February. And at that time, the way it works in a general election here is that the campaigns themselves, plus the national committees of each major party, are really the central fundraising vehicle. And then there are other outside groups that can spend vast sums of money. But the point here that is salient for our purposes is, as of February, Biden and the Democratic National Committee had almost $100 million cash on hand, and Trump and the Republican National Committee had less than $50 million cash on hand, 44.8 to be precise, to 97.5 for Biden and the DNC. That is obviously a significant deficit. I'm just doing the math in my head, and that is a more than 2-to-1 advantage for Biden. Some of that deficit that Trump is suffering could, in effect, be made up by very wealthy people spending money independently of his campaign, though still aimed at getting him elected. But there's no question that looking at those figures, the fundraising figures, you would prefer to be Biden with 97, almost 98 million in the bank, to Trump with 45 million about.
And how potent is that money to buy TV ads? How potent is it? Can it be measured in terms of percentage points in the contest?
Well, the thing about that is that there's an ongoing debate, as you might imagine, in this country about how effective TV advertising is and other forms of advertising for that matter. There is no question that it can be effective. And the problem is when you have a 2-to-1 disadvantage, which Trump currently does, then you do run the risk of the other side sort of swamping you with advertising. That can have an effect, and certainly can have an effect at two particular times. One is before the campaign has really got off in earnest. Can you crystallize a public negative opinion of your opponent? Most people in this game think Barack Obama did that to Mitt Romney in 2012, and all the way back to Bill Clinton as president in 1996. He advertised very early against Bob Dole, who was his Republican opponent that year. So it does matter, but having said that, that advantage that Biden has in fundraising comes, as you just noted, when he faces very severe headwinds in terms of where the polls are and in terms of other issues relating to Biden's age that you and I have spoken about a number of times previously.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now, imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
It's significant that Biden is behind now in all of those seven battleground states when he, in fact, won six of them in the 2020 election. How chronic is that, Niall? And the other question is, how volatile does the American electorate feel to you, particularly when they look closely at Trump? Here's a man who has sexual assault conviction in New York, this woman, E. Jean Carroll. He is, his 91 criminal charges that he's facing. You know, his character is evidently worthless in many respects. He's a braggart. Why? How can a nation like America, which has produced, you know, so many great statesmen, politicians, how can they fall for his shtick, as they call it in showbiz?
So the reasons for Donald Trump's support, obviously there isn't one specific reason, but I think that obviously a large part of it is a belief among many Trump voters that they are either looked down upon or have been frozen out of modern America in certain respects. I mean, there has been obviously a hollowing out of many of the states that we'll go on to talk about. The industrial Midwest, for example, has lost massive population in many regards. It was once very prosperous. It's now less so thanks to the loss of heavy industry, steelmaking, things of that nature. Now, I think that there is a legitimate issue where working class Americans have in many ways got screwed by developments over a period of maybe two or three decades. And their anger at that is further exacerbated by, I would say, people in what they would term the mainstream media or in academia or in Hollywood, who they consider to be condescending and patronizing toward them. Those things have a degree of legitimacy about them, quite frankly. The problem is that Donald Trump has sort of seized upon those and presented himself as the panacea or antidote for them. And it's not at all clear that he has any serious plan to redress those grievances. And so you're in this situation where people have an enormous, people who vote for him, you know, have an enormous personal loyalty to him that cannot be shaken loose by almost anything, it would appear. But that gets me to the other point, the other part of your question, which was about how serious the situation is for Biden and all of that. Right now, looking at November's election, you would Trump would be favored to win. Certainly, if the election were held tomorrow, he would be favored to win. There is a question mark as to whether some of this edge that Trump is currently enjoying could fall away. There will, of course, be Democratic advertising around, for example, there's a civil case about sexual battery in which he was found liable for the behavior toward E. Jean Carroll. There'll, of course, be concentration on the criminal trials. There will, of course, be Democratic advertising rerunning the events of January the 6th, 2021. And Trump always stirs controversy by his own words. So that's a long way around saying the question is, when the electorate is confronted by Donald Trump front and center again, the de facto Republican nominee, very close to becoming president again, will there be a turning away, even to a slight extent, of those moderate or suburban or centrist voters who can be decisive in a close presidential election?
Just two quick questions before we finish, Niall. One concerns the people convicted in criminal cases after they behaved violently on January 6th, when we should remember six, seven people died. But Trump has now taken to calling them. They're serving, one of them serving 17-year prison sentence, but there are a number of them. He's taken to calling them the hostages and has declared that on day one, if he's re-elected, he will pardon those people.
Yes, he has.
That's a remarkable, well, it is remarkable.
Yeah, and I mean, just the mere fact of referring to them as hostages or as some others on the Trump sort of MAGA wing refer to them political prisoners. Yeah. It is remarkable in a number of ways. Not least the fact that the Republican Party historically has, and still now, portrays itself as the party of law and order, would be, for example, very pro-police, very pro-military, all the rest of it. Now, on January the 6th, around about 160 to 170 police officers were injured. And some of them were injured by these people who Trump now refers to as hostages or who get referred to as political prisoners. That is a remarkable shift, and to suggest that he will pardon them or whatever is quite an extraordinary claim to make by a candidate of the Republican Party for the presidency of the United States.
Just a final question, and I'm repeating it myself in a way because you've told us this several times in the last few weeks. Michigan is one of the battleground states. Mm-hmm. In that state, there are approximately 200,000 Arab Americans. They represent about 2% of the state's population. That's a very big problem for Biden in the light of the alienation, if you like, that has come because of his support for Israel.
It is. No, absolutely. And I mean, that could be a really critical point in Michigan, which is a very significant state, not only because it is one of those seven that will decide the election, but because it's one of the bigger ones. I mean, there are 15 electoral college votes up for grabs in Michigan. If those people do not come out for Biden, and if they are joined in their staying away by, say, younger voters or black voters or progressive voters, then Biden could be in real difficulty in Michigan. And because he is right now down in the polls in all seven of those states that we're talking about, he has very little room for error or leeway. And the loss of Michigan would obviously make that task more difficult.
We're very grateful to you, Niall. Thank you very much indeed for joining us today. Niall Stanage is Associate Editor of The Hill newspaper. We're grateful to Niall, to all of you for listening. That's all we have time for now. We'll talk to you soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.